Geezers. The idea of driving over to the coast for the weekend came to him as a revelation, what his English professor used to call an epiphany. Actually, it came to him from Debbie, his personal secretary. "You look so tired, Warren," she had said. "Last weekend, I left the kids with Pat and went over to Lincoln City and found a motel, and I just sat there with a dumb novel for a whole afternoon and went to bed at 9, and in the morning I had this long walk on the beach. I must have gone a mile. It made all the difference, in case you noticed how cheerful and brilliant I've been all week." Although he did not always get the details, he generally listened to Debbie, and this time what she had said, even the words, came to him as an epiphany while he was driving home. Saturday was lunch with the Curry County Commissioner about South County development, but a phone call put that off till Tuesday. He got back into the car in jeans and windbreaker, with pajamas, running shoes, sweats, and a toothbrush in his briefcase, and took off. He knew he was a creature of habit, stuck in every rut he got into. He knew that was why he was effective, got things done. But Debbie was right. He needed a break. And the fact was that because he was so steady in routine, when he broke loose and did something out of the ordinary, he appreciated it, savored it to the full. Since the divorce, he hadn't given himself much to savor. But now he was free, and he wasn't even going to Lincoln City, but farther, to find some hidden place, a discovery. "I found this incredible little place over on the coast." The Cutlass flew through the winding Wilson River gorges. God, it was beautiful. He ought to get out of town more often, to Tillamook Junction, a toss-up, 101 south to Tijuana, or north to Fairbanks. He did not hesitate. Fancy free, he sped north. He had forgotten that 101 ran inland for a good way north of Tillamook. By the time he got back out to the coast, the sun had set, and motel signs in the little town said, "No," and "Sorry." When he saw the sign for Clatsend, population 251, "Please drive carefully," he took the chance and turned off the highway. There'd be something down in town. There was. The White Gull. Vacancy. Marigolds and wooden boxes brightening the twilight. "You're lucky," said the short woman at the desk, with a smile that grudged him his luck. "They booked the whole place, but they're too short, and they only pay for what they get. It's 2 nights minimum. 14's the end one, across there." She pushed the key at him with no questions about what he wanted and no information concerning the cost. He was lucky. He accepted the luck and the key and put down his credit card. A lot of people in Salem would have recognized his name, but not over here in the boonies. The woman, "John and Mary Bernese, your hosts, are pleased to welcome you," ran the imprinter over the card with a heavy hand. "Have a nice day," she said, although it was nearly 9 at night. "Park anywhere. They're all in the bus." What she meant, evidently, was that the other people staying at the White Gull had all come on the huge bus that loomed across 4 or 5 parking spaces. Walking along beside it on his way to number 14, he read the sign that ran along under its windows. "The Sightseeing Seniors of Cedarwood, a Christian community." It'll be a quiet night at the White Gull, he thought with amusement. He looked over the clean room, its king-size bed, its gypsy dancer on black velvet, and schooner in the sunset, smelled its bubblegum disinfectant, and went out to dinner. Coming into town, he had noticed a place called Mayfield's, a promising name. He had a flair for little places. Mayfield's was bigger than it looked from outside, and rather elegant, with white tablecloths and hurricane lamp candles. It was also quite full, voices crowding warmly under the beamed ceiling. A boy hurried to seat him. "Are you with a group, sir?" "No, no," Warren said, smiling. "I thought you were kind of late if you were," the boy said, ingenuous, leading him to a small dark table under a Boston fern. "They're mostly on dessert. I'm Josh. Would you like something from the bar?" Rose Ellen, who looked like she might be Josh's mother, brought Warren a glass of Chardonnay. While he waited for his grilled Chinook, he watched the sightseeing seniors. They sat by fours and sixes. They were merry, convivial, gray and white and bald heads bobbing in the candlelight. They shouted stories from table to table and laughed aloud. There wasn't a wine glass on any table but his own. Strong in their numbers, they acted like they owned the place, but they were having such a good time, who could blame them? And suddenly his sleeve was plucked. A nice-looking old lady at the next table was leaning over and smiling. "If you'd like to join us, you know, you just do that. We're terribly noisy." Oh, no, thanks so much, Warren said, with his fundraising smile. I'm just enjoying listening to you all. Well, you looked so lonesome sitting there, and I just didn't like to think you might feel left out, the old lady said, and nodded reassuringly, and turned away. These are the salt of the earth, Warren said to himself as his salmon arrived. These are Americans. A few of them left while he was eating. They stopped by one table or another to say good night and make more jokes. There seemed to be an infallible subject of hilarity, something to do with Wayne and trout fishing, and when Wayne himself left, shouting, "See you at the fishing hole!" gales of laughter swept the room. Most of them were still there, some still eating cake and drinking coffee, when Warren slipped out with a nod to the nice lady at the next table. She smiled and said, "You take care now." His room had no sea view, but he could hear the breakers just over the dunes. He had stuffed a folder on the Amundsen Committee in his briefcase under the running shoes, but after looking at it for 5 minutes, he turned on the big TV set and watched the last half of a detective show. Finding he had slept right through the gunfire, he brushed his teeth and went to bed. Faint sounds of seniors parting before their doors blended with the long in, out of the sea. He slept. He woke. Where? Banging on the door. What door? Oh, excuse me. Gee, I thought Jerry and Alice were in this one. Excuse us. Retreating laughter. It was a little before 7. He lay a while luxuriating, then got up ready for a run on the beach. He thought of Debbie, so proud of walking a mile. Most women past a certain age didn't keep themselves fit. He felt tremendously fit this morning. After the dim motel room with its lined curtains, the sweep of the morning sky dazzled him. Shadows of the dunes lay cool and blue across the sand, but the foaming breakers and the sea burned like salt fire in the summer light. All up and down the beach, though it wasn't 7:30 yet, people walked and jogged in pairs and groups. As he trotted by, they nodded and greeted him, "Morning, morning." They were bald or gray, in purple sweats and flowered shirts. They were the seniors, keeping fit. A young man and woman flashed by at a run, running like deer. He jogged after them. Their double footprints in the sand were at twice the interval of his own. As he kept on, the seniors began to thin out. By the time he was halfway to the big rock that closed off the beach at the south, he had it all to himself, except for the young couple, who sped back past him without a glance, talking continuously in clear, unwinded voices. It was a long way to the rock. He got his breath there, sitting on a black boulder over tide pools, and then jogged back slowly. No need to push it. The beach was now empty, as if new created, made for him alone, the first man. He was grateful. He showered and went to find breakfast. Tom's Seaside Grill looked like the place for breakfast, red-checked tablecloths, bustling waitresses. "Your party's in the garden room, sir," said the fair, plump girl with the menus. "I'm not with them," Warren said with a flash of irritation. "I see. This way, then," said the girl, woundingly uninterested, and took him to a front window table. From it he watched all Clatsend pass. As the occupants of the garden room left in pairs and groups and stood about in front of Tom's, it appeared that all Clatsend consisted of sightseeing seniors. But of course, Warren thought, these small beach communities had a large percentage of retired population year-round. Thinking about taxation demography, he was relieved to see a young woman with two toddlers go by. And there was a couple, not exactly young, but anyway, not old. And dogs, large, free, joyous dogs, beach dogs, went by, stopping now and then politely to greet a senior. The menu had a senior special across the top. One-piece bacon or sausage, no cholesterol eggo, wheat toast, low-cal spread, and prunes. Warren ordered 2 over-easy with home fries. The coffee was warm brown bitter water, but the food was hot and succulent, high-cal. "I'll work this morning and sit on the beach this afternoon," he told himself. He liked to know what he was going to do, to dig his rut, even for a day. He strolled back to the White Gull, happy. The marigolds blazed. "Hey there, terrific day," somebody greeted him. He tried to place him. County? State? This imposing old man with a broad, bald, brown head. Then realized it was Wayne, the trout fisherman. "Well, hi," he said. He almost added, "Going fishing?" but did not. It would have pleased the old geezer, but he wanted He did not know quite why. He wanted not to be involved with them. He read, made notes, drafted a proposal. Though the light in the room was annoyingly dim, the work went fast and easily here, with no distractions, and all at once it was 1 o'clock. He had worked off that big breakfast and was hungry. He went back up to Main Street and walked up one side and down the other of its 3 commercial blocks, appreciating the sunlit, salt-bitten, gray-shingled shops and houses, all one-storied. No neon, no fast-food chains. They had a smart town council here, with a policy. Edna's Dory Diner looked like a good bet for lunch. He checked through the window first. Edna's was nearly empty. A couple with a baby at one table. No gray, white, or bald heads. There were only 6 tables. He went in. A woman shaped like a section of log, covered with a short dress and apron, greeted him from the kitchen doorway. "Your group's over at the Dancing Sand Dab," she said sternly. "I don't have a group," he answered, equally sternly. "Oh, sorry," she said, not sounding sorry. "I just thought. Well, sit anywhere." She vanished into the kitchen. He sat. The sole was heavily breaded and had been fried in grease for a long time. He knew in his heart that the Dancing Sand Dab had light, delicate, low-cal sole. After lunch, he walked around town, happy again, conscious of being happy. He looked at souvenirs in windows. He would come back and get one of those sandcastle ashtrays for Debbie. She still smoked, though not on the job, of course. He played with the idea of buying one of the little houses east of Maine, serene in their weedy gardens and gray paling fences, sunlight on their silvery shake roofs. It wasn't old money, of course, like Gearhart, or a prestige location like Salishan, but it had a kind of quiet class. A house in Clatsend would be an interesting statement. Independent. "That's my trademark," he thought. "Independence. I don't go with the group." Wandering astray, he found he had to cross a strange, marshy area and skirt a black wood of heavily drooping trees to get back to the dunes. The dunes were higher here south of the main part of town. He climbed. His shoes filled instantly with sand. He came out above the broad sweep of beach, already familiar, the big rock at the south end, the high green headland at the north, the seniors dotted all about in shorts and swimsuits, wading, sunbathing, playing volleyball. He found himself a hollow in the dunes from which he could just see the ocean, but not the beach. Shouts and laughter from afar mingled with the soft thunder of the breakers. It was incredibly hot in the hollow, though the sea wind blew over it, making the feathery heads of the dune grass nod. After 20 minutes, he knew he had to get either some sunblock or a hat. He had noticed a little pharmacy on Spruce Street. He climbed back over the dunes and walked along the wide sandy road between them and the front row of houses. A beachfront property was the most desirable, but even in a place like this, the price would be pretty stiff. A good investment, though, now that Californians were buying up the South Coast. Actually, he liked some of those little houses on the other side of Maine better, but they were pretty much retirement income-type places. It was too bad. The girl behind the counter in the small drugs and souvenirs and postcards and taffy shop was beautiful, a dark-eyed redhead, luminous. She did not speak, but he was aware of her presence as he looked over the terrible terry-cloth hats by the door and then idled along the shelves, reading the protection factors on tubes of sunblock, glancing at her now and then. When at last he brought his selection to the counter, she smiled at him, and he smiled back. She wore a black plastic tag with her name in gold, Irma. "You people are really having a time of it," she said. "I think it's just wonderful." Warren's heart seemed to drop or sink physically an inch or more inside his chest. "I work in Salem," he said. It sounded strange. "This is a nice town," he said. She knew something was amiss, but didn't know what. "It's real quiet," she said. "And 4 makes 10. Have a good day now. Take care."
"I'm only 52, Warren cried out to her in despairing silence.
The sunblock in its little paper bag was in his hand, but he could not go back to the beach with the frolicking seniors. He struck out north up Lewis Street, then along Fir Street to Clark Street. There was a little park back in here, he had noticed after lunch. He would sit in the park and put sunblock on his forehead and nose. He did so, sitting on a bench in the dappled shade of the big, black, droopy trees that grew around here.
he was unaccountably tired, even sleepy. But that was what he'd come here for, to relax, after all. Gulls yiped, crows croaked, children's voices called across the sunlit, weedy grass of Clatson City Park. An intermittent, droning, bumping noise must be the sound of the ocean coming and going on the wind. Above a vast bank of rhododendrons with purple flowers, a small child appeared, flying. Presently it appeared again, flying in the same direction. It was such a pleasant sight, a flying child, that Warren, in his habitude of weariness and sunlight, simply accepted it. A second and larger child in a red and white and blue-striped rugby shirt flew over the rhododendrons in the same direction, with the same rise and dip, like a swallow. Warren sighed a little, getting up. He did not hurry. A third child soared past as he crossed the grass and walked around the thicket of rhododendrons. The city of Clatson had built for its children a skateboard rink, an oval of cement with a steeply slanted wall shaped like the figure three, and the children of Clatson flew about that wall and up into the air, with a light drone and clap of wheels, one after another, like swallows from a cliff. Warren watched them with the earnest, stupid absorption of a sleepy man. They were beautiful and almost entirely silent. They flew, came down, came around on the grass with the skateboard under arm, and waited in line to fly again. Near Warren, one boy stood, skateboard under arm, but not in line. "Looks like fun," Warren said, unsmiling, softly. "Kids," the boy said. He was, Warren realized, a couple of years older than the flying children. Maybe more. Maybe 4 or 5 years older. Maybe a teenager. "They don't like it when we take over," the boy said, tolerantly. He had never looked at Warren. He did not have to. He said nothing more. In the shade of the rhododendron sat several other boys his age, waiting to take over. Warren stood and watched the children flying until the heat of the sun beat in his temples. He went back then to the motel. Mrs. Bernese was out front, pulling up tiny weeds from the boxes of marigolds. "Too hot down on the beach for you?" she said with her vindictive smile, and he said, "Guess it is," though she must have seen that he wasn't even coming from the beach. The nice lady, the one who had invited him to join her table, was letting herself in at number 16. She smiled at him. "Well, hi there. Have you been enjoying yourself?" "Yes," said Warren, surrendering. "Have you?" "Oh, yes, but the beach is so hot today." "I went to the park. Watched the kids skateboarding." "Oh, yes, they are so bad, those skateboards," she said with hearty assurance of their being in agreement. "Come up behind you before you know it and could just knock you off your feet. They ought to be banned. Illegal."
"Yes," said Warren.
"Well?"
He unlocked his door. "Have a good day," he said.
"Oh, I will," she said. "Take care now."